Welcome to The Parrot Unbound. This is Grace, the podcast editor here at Portsmouth Public Library. You're listening to the second installment of Blanket Fort Broadcasts, a series of episodes recorded live in our homes during quarantine. Today's episode is a cozy roundtable discussion about baking and books. I think this is the first time we've had staff from so many different library departments contribute to a Parrot Unbound discussion. Gretel and Andrew both work in youth services. Mary Jo may be familiar to you from the circulation desk. Polina is in both reference and special collections. And Michaela hails from our technical services department. On a very serious note, I do have to warn you that this episode contains spoilers for the Great British Bake Off Series 6. That's Great British Bake Off Series 6. Listener beware. If you care to look up any of the delicious recipes mentioned, all the books and links are posted in the show notes for this episode on whatever podcast platform you're listening through. Stay safe and happy listening.
All right. So the first question that I had was just for everybody to tell us, like, what do you like to bake? What kinds of things do you bake? Are you like a cookie baker, a bread baker, a fancy cake baker?
I'm a cookie baker. I mostly just stick to that because it's like what I grew up with. So I just keep doing that.
I decided to make chocolate chip recipe my thing. So I've made all my friends sick of my chocolate chip cookie recipes because I'm always like, try this batch.
I wonder if you can really get sick of chocolate chip cookie recipes.
I mean, no.
There are so many. I'm discovering plenty. Like, there's one in this book, which I took out, called Rage Baking. Highly recommend it. And there's one on tahini chocolate chip cookies with sesame seeds on top. Delicious.
Sounds really good.
And it has, like, the crunch of the sesame seeds on top. It's very, very satisfying.
I like that kind of savory with the chocolate chip cookies too. I use salted butter. That's my secret ingredient. Oh. And cinnamon. And it helps.
I always use salted butter, no matter what the recipe says.
For cookies or for any kind of baking?
For almost anything.
Yeah, I'll usually buy salted. I sent my boyfriend to the store to buy butter once and he came home with like unsalted. And I was like, well, this will work, but it's not going to be quite the same. Because there is a difference, definitely.
Oh, I'm going to have to try that then. I've always just used straight regular butter. Or because, like, I'm dairy-free, I have to use the... I just use whatever dairy-free base spread thing I have in the fridge. They're still chocolate chip cookies. You just ignore the fact there's no butter in it.
So the thing that I love about baking, actually, I don't like cooking. I am no good at like creating recipes. And so the thing that I like about baking is that it's a recipe and that you really need to follow the recipe for it to be successful. So all the recipes I've used use unsalted butter. So I've always just stuck to the unsalted butter.
I'll like stick to quantities, but sometimes if like a chocolate cake recipe says milk, I'll do like half milk and half sour cream. So it's like buttermilk.
Ooh.
I never have buttermilk in my house.
That's a really cool life hack. I didn't know about that.
I did find a lot of blogs yesterday that were like, here's how you can do alternatives, how you measure if you're going to use like cream instead of milk. How much you should use instead, because I definitely tried to replace milk with something else in a recipe recently, and it did not work with a one-to-one ratio at all. It was definitely had to go in the trash.
You know what does work really well, though? I've been in a situation where I don't have sour cream, but I have Greek yogurt, and that works really well, I found. I haven't done it in years, but I remember the last time I needed sour cream for a recipe, it was like you can substitute Greek yogurt instead, and I honestly didn't even notice a difference in the taste. I think I made like a chocolate, it was supposed to be like a chocolate pie or something with like cream cheese on the top within the frosting, and it was like fine.
I'm going to throw one of my friends under the bus. We always make fun of her because one time with a recipe, she substituted like too many ingredients with applesauce. Yes. It was an interesting creation.
What
but we love her.
Trying to make?
It was pancakes.
Oh.
And it was like the dairy and the eggs got replaced with applesauce. So.
How does that even What?
I feel like you can replace like certain fats in with applesauce.
But... We were desperate. We were in our early 20s. Choices were made.
You know, it was a really good substitute, though, that I wasn't expecting to work. We made like power bar or like protein bars for hiking, and we didn't have any regular flour left. So I used almond flour for like a vegan recipe previously. So we just used that for the power bars, and it was a chocolate protein bar, and it made it taste almost like Nutella, like chocolatey, hazelnutty sort of. It was really good. Oh, it was hazelnut flour. I apologize. Hazelnut flour. It was so good.
So Paulina, what do you like to bake? What's your like baking specialty?
I love to bake pies. That's my favorite thing to make. For my birthday, I like to make a pie and then eat it. And it's at the end of September. So usually there's still strawberries in beginning of September. So there's usually still strawberries and rhubarb. That's the best, obviously. But I make a mean apple pie and I don't even have to look at a recipe anymore. I just do it.
That's my favorite pie.
And I was always so scared to make the dough, but like several years ago, I started making the pie crust myself. And it's actually so easy. It's just butter and flour.
I actually watched a really good video on Creative Bug about making pie crust. And I haven't tried it yet, but I know it's easy and simple.
I was always afraid, so I've always made just like sweet treats. I have a wicked sweet tooth, and I got this baking book from the library. It's a kid's book, like the complete baking book for kid chefs. That's not the right title, but it was America's Test Kitchen put it out, and it is by far my favorite baking book. I make everything out of it, and they have these great recipes for like whole wheat bread and focaccia bread, and I always thought this was like so scary. There's no way I could do this, and it the same thing. It was not as hard as I thought it was going to be, and surprisingly delicious. I was like, why am I ever going to buy bread from the grocery store again now that I know that I can just do this and it's so easy?
Well, it's like it kind of centers you on the idea that like this didn't used to be a hobby. It used to just be what you did every single day, which is like kind of a strange abstract thing for me to think about, because like I've never lived a day in my life where I had to make my food to survive. It's interesting how something so essential in yesteryear is now something that brings us joy, but also it tastes good and it does give us sustenance, so even a pie.
I've been watching the webcomic Check Please, or reading. We have book one, book two is coming out soon. Side note.
For anyone who doesn't know, Check Please is about a boy who goes off to college, and he decides to be on the hockey team instead of be a figure skater. He was really good, but his passion project is baking. So throughout the it was collected into a graphic novel, like Mary Jo said. The whole story is kind of about him coming out to his team and getting comfortable in college, but also there's these great like moments of baking bliss. It reminded me a lot of Bloom, another graphic novel that's like centralized on like baking as a setting almost.
What other resources do you guys use for like baking and finding recipes and trying out new things?
I've been using Bigger Bolder Baking, and there's a really great chocolate chip triple chocolate recipe in here that I've been using.
I find a lot through Instagram. I follow like Bon Appetit and Smitten Kitchen and 52.
Love to watch the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen videos.
They're so good. I've recently been pushed into watching them, and It's Alive is great. I want to ferment everything.
It's Alive is so good. I did the honey garlic fermentation, and I want to do the ginger garlic paste so badly, but I don't have any ginger in my house, so I have to wait till the next time we go to the grocery store.
What is this? Can you talk more about what that is?
Yeah, it's like, there's this ginger garlic paste situation that's used in like Indian cooking a lot, and it's just like fermented ginger and garlic, and then you blend them, and then you just have a paste, and you like add it into the base of dishes with like onions, or you can like put it with like, I think in the video they put it with shrimp. This is more cooking than baking, and there's lots of baking stuff because they have a pastry chef on the Bon Appetit Text Kitchen redo all of these like junk food recipes as gourmet foods, and those are really fun to watch.
I'm currently trying to ferment a sourdough starter. And I don't know if we just don't have a particularly yeasty kitchen, but it's, she's taking her sweet time.
Last winter, my roommate's mom gave me part of her old sourdough starter that she's had for many, many years. And I tried several times to make sourdough bread. I was like, fed it. I waited till the right time, watched it get to peak bubbliness. I fed it like every day for 3 days so it would be full of activity, and I didn't keep it in the fridge. And I only made like paving stones. I tried so hard and they were so flat. They tasted good and were good if you like put them in the microwave with butter to eat to soften them up, but it was so incredibly dense.
The way you're talking about this makes it sound like it's a literal pet.
It is alive. Yeast is alive. So you're feeding it and it's eating and it is creating bubbles of gas.
You have like a jar and you have to dump half of it out every day that it's like out on your counter, and then put like a half a cup of water and flour mixture back in it so it feeds and continues growing. And my compost was so disgusting after doing that.
Mine was so gross this week. Cleaning out my bin was a horror.
I love the idea of turning junk food recipes into like gourmet recipes. So one of my favorite bakers is Christina Tosi, who I saw on Chef's Table on Netflix a while ago and became obsessed. She runs Milk Bar, which started in New York City, but she was originally like the pastry chef for Momofuku in New York City. And she is just this junk food junkie. Like when she shows pictures of herself shopping, is like just all of this remarkable amounts of just processed crap and turns it into these magically tremendous desserts. And she's been doing like a baking club on Instagram also with like, here's like basic ingredients you probably have at home that you can use, and here's some like bonus ingredients. And I have only done one of them so far. I made these like compost pancakes. So yeah, it was like pancakes with like butterscotch chips and pretzels and granola and chocolate chips and other randomness, like just sort of like whatever you have that's junk food, throw it in the pancakes and it was really rich. We could not eat as many pancakes as we normally eat. I'm also a big fan of the Great British Baking Show. And I think somebody was talking about the Great British Baking Show. There was a comment earlier. I can't remember what it was. Michaela, what do you like about it?
First of all, it is the friendliest competition show ever. And it's just so sweet. Like, they're competing, but if somebody needs help, they like turn around and lend a hand, or like need you to hold up the base of your cake, and they do it. And it's really lovely. Also, it's just baked goods and it's great. And Paul Hollywood is so critical.
But like the one thing about that show is, why don't they do it in a different time of the year? Because like every year they're like, it's bread week, it's 100 degrees, let's see what happens. And like the refrigerators are just like, wah. And you're like, I don't know if anything's going to work, but it always does. So yes. Mostly because they're so nice to each other.
Exactly. Teamwork. But it is, it's always like, you're working with ice cream today. And it's the one day in England that's a million degrees.
Yep.
Or sponge sugar. My dream is to make croquembouche, the little puff pastries, and then you decorate it with sponge sugar.
Someday. I have saved many recipes from that show.
I just watched recently that Nadia Hussein won. Like her at the end, I was like bawling because it was just so beautiful. Like she never thought she was gonna win, and when she was like, I'm never gonna tell myself that I can't do something again, like I could do anything, I was just a sobby mess. And she's written some cookbooks and books for kids now also that I'm dying to check out.
Maybe my favorite. And she has a cooking show that she does, which is so nice.
So what about, like I said, I have like a super sweet tooth and I'm not gluten or vegan or anything like that. So I do pretty standard baking. Have you guys adapted your baking to be gluten-free or other allergen-free?
Well, I'm like dairy. So I have to like, I can't use butter. Well, I can, but I have to be super careful. So like if anything, like I'll use olive oil spread for my butter substitute, and just, and then, you know, I just don't worry about it. Taste is what it is. And then I just use milk chocolate chips, and then I'm just very careful. But there is a cookbook that a girl that I know recommended which is dairy-free cooking. So there are books out there where professionals will like create recipes that are delicious using like ingredients for people who have to make those substitutions.
My roommate is dairy-free and gluten-free, so she'll eat eggs, and she makes a chocolate orange cake that's just eggs and almond flour and cocoa powder and baking powder maybe and orange pulp, and then with a chocolate ganache on top, and it is incredibly good and like very easy to make. It's the best. It's so good. We made it a few weeks ago for her birthday and ate it for breakfast. It's incredibly easy to make, except for like the making the orange pulp situation, because you just get all of that stuff out of there. But we had some that was in our freezer from last time we did it.
This is a really weird question, but I read a graphic novel recently called Meal, and I thought it was just going to be a cute like baking or cooking story, and I totally missed that the whole cover was covered in bugs, and it's actually about cooking with bugs and baking with bugs. And at first I had exactly Polina's reaction, where I was like, this is nasty, I'm a vegetarian, why am I even reading this? But I was surprised at like the amount of things you could do with insects. And I think especially I was impressed with like how indigenous communities throughout the world had done this to like survive or to just enrich their diets. And I was wondering if anyone has done any baking. I think there was cricket flour, like they ground crickets up and incorporate into the flour to add like protein to that. It was really interesting. Has anyone, I know this is probably a no, but has anyone like experimented with that at all, or like even eaten anything that had insect ingredients in it?
I have not, but I've thought about it, because it is what you said about the protein. Cricket flour is super high in protein, so it would probably do interesting things to bread. Could be interesting.
Yeah. I think the flavor index would be the most interesting thing to explore for me. I don't know. It was really intriguing. Maybe I'll make like cricket bread or something and let you know how it goes.
I wonder where you would get cricket flour.
So
a lot of people who are interested in, I think it's called emphimagi, the culinary use of insects. I think they raise them themselves actually a lot of the times. So like you need a system where you raise some of them to adulthood so that they can reproduce, and then most of the larvae or the younger crickets you would like use for consumption. So it's like you have to create that whole system. In the graphic novel, the cook had like almost like in youth services where you pull out drawers made out of wire. She had like a stack of those, and you know, the larva started at the top, and each drawer was a different stage, and all of the waste would fall through, and she would call the herd. I don't know what it's called, honestly, but it was really interesting. There's a lot of buy-in, but like it seemed like it could be really cool to explore. They did talk about the gentrification of emphimagi, where like the authors hoped that people would go to those like indigenous communities to get recipes, to get the story behind why this has happened for millennia and why it could be great for the world. So like specialty stores, I'd say, would probably have these kind of ingredients, maybe the natural market in Dover or in downtown Portsmouth. I guess that would be the best bet for me. I can't think of anywhere else that would really carry that stuff. Although you might be able to find some ingredients like in a specialty store like Lowe's over in Newington, the Asian food market. They might have some things that are used in Asian cuisine. But like I said, I'm excited to explore it.
It'll be really interesting. Yeah, I would love to give that a shot.
I would love for you to give it a shot and then taste it before I gave it a shot.
Okay.
So somebody touched on this a little bit earlier about like baking as joy and how baking, especially for other people, can really like provide you a joy and creating that experience, bring joy to others. So I wondered about memories. Like, how did you start baking, or do you have a favorite memory of baking with someone that you cared about? Like, I know a lot of people talk about baking with their grandmas. I did not do that. I came to it much later, but I just wondered about your other experiences.
I've always made chocolate chip cookies. That's always been the thing that I really like doing. And my grandma has a really great chocolate chip cookie recipe, which I discovered is basically just the recipe from the back of a bag of chocolate chip cookies. Like that's the recipe that she used. Delightful regardless. She was a delightful person.
My mom used the same recipe, I think. And I have like strong memories of sitting on the counter while she made it, but it was definitely just the Toll House recipe from the back of the bags.
But that's like the recipe, which I didn't know until a picture book came out about this like a couple of years ago. But that is how chocolate chip cookies started, is with that Toll House cookie recipe. Who knew?
I mean, there's ways to switch it up too. Like I'll do different chips in the recipe because I grew up with that recipe too, thinking my mom made it up because, you know, your mom created the world. I did like butterscotch and semi-sweet the other week. They had espresso chips that I added. I would suggest if you do the espresso chips though, do half espresso, half semi-sweet. They're not quite sweet enough. It's interesting how we make things that we learn from like a formative caregiver, because I noticed that everybody tries to make what their caregiver made them. And I think it's like a nostalgia thing combined with, this will probably be a little bit easier than going in blind. So that's kind of why I stuck with like chocolate chip cookies, double chocolate bundt cake, like these things that my mom made all through childhood.
My grandmother used to like come over the day before Thanksgiving and we would make the apple pies, and then she would stay with us that night and we'd get up. So I made apple pies with her first before anything. And my mom used to make so many, she would make breads and pizza doughs.
My mom makes some pumpkin bread and pumpkin pie every Thanksgiving, Christmas. That's like her thing. And I have a really hard time eating anybody else's pumpkin bread or pumpkin pie, because I just like my mom's. It's something about having like that my mom made it that makes it even that much more delicious. And now my niece and nephew love to go help her make it also and do the mixing and add all the ingredients. And they get their own little breads that they don't have to share with anybody at the end of it. And it's really nice to see that go into that next generation now too. That's a good question, Andrew. When you make cookies, do you give the beaters and bowl to someone to enjoy, lick them yourself, or just wash up?
I eat a little bit of cookie dough on the way to the end, and then I give the beaters and the bowl to someone to enjoy. But I don't think I would if I didn't enjoy a little bit along the way.
Exactly. Yeah.
I try to share, but only because I couldn't eat it all myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta save room for the finished product.
Yeah, that's another lesson, hard lesson to learn when you're like, you know, 18, 19, doing a recipe on your own. You're like, I can eat all this, all myself, all this cookie dough. And then you're like, I don't want any cookies now at all. It's awful.
I have salmonella poisoning from eating raw cookie dough.
that's the fear.
I definitely loved licking the beaters when I was a kid. Now, my niece loves to do it. My nephew does not like the sensation. She's thrilled because she gets both of them.
It's valuable individual time for siblings.
So another question I had written down is, so the other show that I've been watching, because it just makes me like cry laughing, is Nailed It on Netflix, where they get these like really amateur bakers who clearly have no idea what they're doing like at all, and present them with these epic decorated cupcakes and cakes that they then have to recreate and give them nowhere near ample time to do it. And so they're like total disasters when they come out. And watching how they decide like how to bake things, like maybe I'll just add, you know, 5 tablespoons of vanilla extract to this recipe and that will make it taste delicious. Oh, it's horrible. And it's hilarious. And it's so bad. So I wondered about other Nailed It moments, like things that just, like Paulina was talking about with her sourdough breads, like that just did not go well.
I have definitely made paving stones of bread before, and I think I just killed the yeast so it never rose, and it was a flat, hard mess that I still tried to feed to people. And many claggy cakes.
Many what cakes?
Claggy, dense, sad, wet cakes. That's a great British Bake Off word. Thank you, Paul Hollywood.
Once I tried to make vegan gluten-free pie crust, and I also replaced the sugar with honey because it was for my roommate and she was like, I don't want refined sugars. And it was just the whole way through disgusting. The apples and the honey tasted bad together and the crust was like really dense and thick because it was just almond flour and coconut oil and it was disgusting. It was so gross.
But like if you didn't do it, you wouldn't know. So I'm a little less adventurous than you folks. So I haven't had like a moment like that yet, but just give it time.
I have definitely used salted butter and then also as much salt as the recipe called for in cookies. And only one of my friends and I liked them. It was sad, but they were great. Just really salty.
I work at a cafe in Portsmouth and we have like chocolate chip cookies that we make there from our own recipe. We don't order them from the frozen box or anything. I've worked places before where they've done that. You just like take them out of this giant box full of frozen cookies and put them in the oven. But they're salted chocolate chip cookies and they're like salty, but they are so good. They're the best. When they fall on the floor, I'm always like, I have some work to do, but they're delicious. I like a salty cookie.
I love a salted caramel cookie. There's like a cookie truck down in Massachusetts somewhere that when I was in grad school, we'd go to and they had these salted caramel chip cookie sandwiches with ice cream in the middle. And it was the best thing ever. So good.
I actually always get frozen yogurt at the stand near my house because they have a double chocolate salted peanut butter frozen yogurt. And it is literally better than any ice cream I've ever eaten. Salt is where it's at.
There's the Netflix show about a girl who, she had a cookbook about it. Salt fat acid.
Salt acid.
Yes. Oh. I love caffeine.
Not strictly baking, but she is so good. That show is worth it. And the book is so good, which I'm pretty sure we own.
What's her MO?
Like? It was like after her show came out, that cookbook had like a holds list that was so incredibly long. I tried to like, I was like, oh, I'll just go take that out. And I was like, oh, I won't have it for many, many weeks. I will just wait until I think of this again. She does like New York Times cooking recipes sometimes. And there's like a podcast host, Rishi Hirway, he does Song Exploder, and they like collabed on a mango pie, mango puree, and cream cheese, and like cardamom, just a little, and like a little bit of lime too. It tastes so good. It's like eating a mango lassi almost, but like better.
Oh, that sounds divine.
It's a weird format, but Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat is available as an audiobook on Libby.
I've listened to it, yeah. I went and I looked up the physical book, and it's so much more aesthetic with, like, the pictures that go along with it. But the audiobook, like, she reads it herself. It's worth it, just because she has a really nice Indian accent, and it's really nice to listen to while you're driving.
What is it about? Is it a cookbook, or is it...
Yeah, it's like a cookbook, but also like salt, fat, acid, and heat are like the core elements of good cooking, according to Samin. And she just like explores that one element and then the next one. And in the show, there's just four episodes and they're so beautiful. And it's just her being like absolutely delighted by things like the entire time. She makes focaccia bread. She like goes to Japan and explores how they make soy sauce and miso. And it's just... it's so beautiful.
I learned so much about salt, and it's the best.
Speaking of salt and ice cream, she goes to, like, a salt store where they have all these different, like, size granule salts from different locations, and they put just, like, sprinkles of salt on ice cream so you can, like, taste them on something.
That reminds me. So I always forget about it because... it's on the other side of town, but the salt cellar has like a lot of different salts. And I haven't tried using a lot of them in cooking or baking yet, but I was wondering if anyone has, if they have any suggestions.
I love the salt cellar. We basically survive on their truffle salt. Like we just put it on everything. I haven't used it in baking, but you probably could.
not from them, but I've used the like pink Himalayan salt in baking, and I really like it for cookies in particular.
Yeah, that's a good, I use that salt just, I'm so basic. Last night I just had butter and sketty, and I was like a little bit of Himalayan on top, and it was really good. It was really good. I was feeling my butter and sketty fantasy. But
I totally had butter and pasta yesterday also, but with truffle salt on top.
Perfect. It would have been better with truffle salt. I would be willing to bet. They have so much available. Oh, and then just around the corner, what's the name? LaRue? Is it LaRue? The cooking? Yeah, they have a fabulous selection of oils as well. That's really more cooking, or dipping bread. Who doesn't love that? But that's that. So you can bake your bread and then get some good oil from there. That's the tie-in.
Cool. Well, does anybody else have any last minute thoughts or shares or favorite recipes they want to add to?
Well, I will say this. I am a cookie person. I mostly have been making cookies. I make them every 2 days, and I add just a little bit extra, like maybe a quarter of a teaspoon extra of vanilla extract. And then I do heaping packed quarter cups of brown sugar, because I really like that dark, like rich taste. And that seems to work really well. If you ever run out of baking soda and you have baking powder, I think it's a 1 to 3. The number one thing that I suggest any baker to get, beginner, intermediate, advanced, is a little magnet to put on their fridge with conversions on it, because I use that so much. I was like, I had no idea before I started that like a quarter cup was 4 tablespoons. I had no idea how many ounces was in like a pound. Like all of that was a mystery to me, and now it's not. And it's because I referred to it every single day for quarantine.
The amount of time that I've wasted, like, searching my phone for conversions is endless.
Michaela, any final thoughts? Favorite recipes?
Just going to keep plugging away at perfecting my bread recipes and my cookies.
What's next on your baking? What's the next thing that you guys are going to make?
I think the one thing that I've hoarded during this quarantine is canned pumpkin, mostly because my dog eats it on her dinner, but I have a really good pumpkin bread recipe that is delightful, and it's got a nice sugar cinnamon crust on top, and it's so good.
Sounds really good. I have a can of pumpkin and a can of condensed milk in my pantry that I have been hanging on to since Thanksgiving, and now is probably the time to use that in something.
My biggest success this quarantine is definitely making this rosemary focaccia bread out of the kids' cookbook. Because it came out, the recipe said it was going to, like, your dough should be wet and sort of look like cake dough. I'm like, it really does, and it should rise this much, and it really did. It came out so good, and I was so happy. I definitely have not always had success with rising. Although I do try and follow, like, Paul Hollywood's tip of putting the yeast on one side and the salt on the other side before you mix it to sort of keep it from activating, and that has definitely been a good tip. And I think my boyfriend wishes that I would make some more cookies right now, but working from home is busy. It's hard sometimes. but my favorite cookie to make is actually an oatmeal white chocolate chip and cranberry cookie that I make at Christmas time. And I love it. I love it so much.
My favorite Christmas cookie recipe is actually from a cookbook called Outlander Kitchen. And it is a recipe for Claire's molasses cookies, and they are so good. They're spice cookies rolled in powdered sugar, and they taste like all the holidays. So good.
So the book that I've been using is this Complete Baking Book for Young Chefs by America's Test Kitchen. They did a cooking book too for kids. That's so good. And there's like bread recipes and cake recipes and pizza dough and stuff recipes. And I like it because it's not like, well, I like it because it has lots of pictures that tell me how things are supposed to look and lots of detail, but it's also like not dumbed down. Like they're not super oversimplified recipes. So they're still like sort of tricky, but accessible for kids too. There's pretzels. I haven't made that yet. Cheesy bread. So much good stuff. Yeah, I'm like an advertisement for this cookbook. Everything I make is out of this cookbook. There's a Nutella frosting recipe in there. It's so rich and so delicious.
You know what, though? There's a lot of picture books with recipes in the back of them, too. I remember one called Kimchi for Me. It was a recipe. It's about, like, this little cat girl who doesn't get along with her cat siblings. And they have to learn to work together. And kimchi's too spicy for her. So her grandmother makes her kimchi pancakes. And it, like, dilutes the spiciness of it. And I made it out of the back. And it was definitely too cakey. It was very, very much too cakey, not kimchi enough. But the kids' books, they have fabulous recipes in them. I have another one, Bilal Loves Dal, about this Indian boy who wants his friends to try out the cuisine he grew up with and eats every day, and he's scared about it. But it has like a lentil soup recipe, Dal, in the back. And it's interesting because they don't dumb it down. It's very much more, they pay attention more to the steps and making it comprehensive in kids' cooking books. So
another great food graphic novel is the book Relish in the adult graphic novel section. Basically like a love letter to her life in the kitchen and growing up in the kitchen, and it's really sweet. I recommend that whoever's listening pick it up.
I was happy sad when I went to the shelf and it was gone before we all left the building.
One of my favorite like cookbook baking books is Pretend Soup, which is like a preschooler's like cookbook, but we would make popovers from that recipe that's there, and they're so easy and so quick and like enormous, and they have a lot of really good, incredibly easy things to make. And we have it in our collection, but in the youth section, but it's not available online anywhere. So when we all open back up again, Pretend Soup popovers. And it's like also beautiful. It has like bunnies and rabbits making, I don't know, things. It's very cute. It's like really well illustrated.
Well, that was a solid baking discussion, you guys. I'm all inspired now to go make some things and check out some new cookbook. We'll be so interested to hear things our patrons are baking and what they've been making over this quarantine time also. Well, thanks for joining me today for this, and I hope you guys have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.